What would it be like if you were able to live a life that was truly rich and abundant? What does wealth mean to you? And when you hear the word money, what comes to mind? Is it something positive or negative? And what does it mean to you to truly be rich? In this episode, we're discussing what wealth means from a Zen Stoic perspective. Welcome to the Zen Stoic Path, where we share a modern take on timeless wisdom to help you create unshakable inner peace. I'm your host, Victor Pierantoni. Let's get into the show. I'd like to begin this episode by sharing a Zen story that has always helped me when I needed perspective. There was once this Zen master who lived in a very simple house. Didn't have much in terms of decorations or valuables in the house. He just had exactly what he needed. And one night, a burglar broke into his house and noticed that there was nothing of value to steal. The Zen master returned home as the burglar was still in his house, and the burglar was shocked to see this man. The Zen master simply welcomed the man into his home, and the burglar, who was shocked by this reaction, had a bit of a frantic attitude. And so when he noticed he had nothing to steal, the Zen master offered him his clothes. The burglar, confused, took the clothes and ran away. Now, there sat the Zen master completely naked, without anything, any belongings of any kind. And he sat there and he just looked at the moon outside. And he said, "Poor fellow, I wish I could give him this beautiful moon." Now, the essence of that story is to say that, like anything else, when we talk about on the Zen Stoic Path show, we talk about this idea of how the finger pointing at the moon is not the moon. And we talk about money. Money is simply our symbol for value, but it is not value itself. It is the universal symbol that we use for value, so that we can crystallize that value and exchange it for goods and services in our world so that our world can function, so that we can function together and help each other solve problems and accommodate the needs that we have as human beings. As human beings, we are fragile, temporary creatures who will always have problems. Our problems are a sign of life, and we need the ability to be able to solve those problems. So we can look at value as the ability to solve problems. And we can look at money as the symbol for that value that we can actually trade. So if we really think about it, money is neutral. It is simply a symbol that we use. And just like the finger pointing to the moon, money itself isn't the value. It just points to the value. Now, this is a really important understanding for us all, because if we're going to be sitting here on the Zen Stoic Path talking about unshakable inner peace, we need to talk about the areas of life where our inner peace is shaken. And there are three main areas, three main categories where that's going to happen. It's going to be our wealth, our health, and our relationships. Now, in this specific episode, we're going to be talking about the category of wealth when it comes to the true meaning of wealth from a Zen Stoic perspective. Now, the reason why we want to talk about this is because for myself, one of the reasons I was inspired to even record this episode is because I had a major blind spot. I was sitting here for 2 years talking about unshakable inner peace and using Zen Stoic philosophy for that. And yet there was still an area of my life where my inner peace was shaken. And it was the area of money, the area of bringing in money, supporting myself, providing for myself and those that I love. And what I noticed is that every time the money was good, I felt like the hero. And every time the money wasn't what I desired it to be, I felt like a victim of those circumstances. And it was this major blind spot where I would always get shaken. And then I just came to realize that the money didn't equate to my inner peace. My inner peace is something that I could have right here, right now, just by choosing it. But what it took was actually unwinding some of the beliefs that I had about money and being able to see it for exactly what it is. Remember, money itself doesn't have this inherent value to it. We give it value. We choose the meaning that we have for it. And so many people have different types of meanings that they associate to it. When I say the word money, do you have a positive or negative feeling? Or do you have a neutral feeling? Everybody reacts to this differently. Everybody has a different, what is known as an internal representation. So the way that you internally represent this concept and this idea of money in your head. So when I say this, some people will think to themselves, you know, the old adage of money is the root of all evil. Is it really? Or is it the meanings that we associate to it? Because if you believe that money is the root of all evil, then money is always going to be some kind of a villain in your life. And when you have these exchanges, when you start to have these roles for different concepts of life, different circumstances, in this case, money, you start to get caught in what is called a drama triangle. Now, a drama triangle is a way of understanding relationships to people as well as things and concepts in life. Drama Triangle has three parts. You can think of it as the three Vs: the victim, the victor, and the villain. So at any one point, we can be caught in one of these things. And oftentimes, when somebody says something like, money is the root of all evil, or when somebody says, more money, more problems, as the wise philosopher Biggie Smalls once said, then we're going to put ourselves in one of those points of that drama triangle. So if we're looking at money as, in my case, I was looking at it as, when it was good, I was the victor. When it was bad, I was the victim. And money was always the villain, or the thing that I had to conquer. But if we look at it like that, we're going to ultimately create a very distorted relationship with it. And by creating that distorted relationship, we may make decisions that are unwise financially. We might buy things that we don't need in order to try to fill voids within ourselves that cannot be filled with material, but rather with a sense of actual inner peace that we derive from within. So when we talk about this episode, we want to really dive into this idea of what does it mean to have true wealth? So if we think about it, we've been saying that money itself has no inherent value. So for example, if you were on a desert island and you had a pile of $100 million and you had no one to exchange it with and you were just there by yourself, that $100 million wouldn't have much value to you because you couldn't eat that money. It's not edible. You couldn't hug that money, or that money couldn't hug you and tell you that everything was going to be okay. And the only value that it might have in that situation is that maybe you can use it to start a fire to keep yourself warm. But other than that, in that situation, in that context, it has no value. It merely points to it, and it's our symbol for it. So when we think about this idea, Alan Watts would talk about this all the time in his lectures, where he said, when we mistake money for wealth, it's like trying to be satiated by looking at a dinner menu, right? You can't eat the menu. You can't eat a picture of a cake or a sandwich. It's the actual food itself that has the value. So what is that money pointing to, and what is it actually allowing to become possible in our lives? One of the things that really helped me with this idea and what helped me to start to create some true inner peace around this topic of wealth, which, by the way, creating inner peace internally when it comes to wealth also results in an external result of you being able to bring in more money. Now, for me, one of the things that absolutely riveted me was this book here, The Tao of Solomon. So the Tao of Solomon is actually an interpretation of Ecclesiastes. Now, the Tao of Solomon is written by Rabbi Rami Shapiro, and he not only interprets Ecclesiastes, he also brings in the philosophy of Taoism into it. So it's a really interesting mix and perspective. But this book specifically was like a jaw dropper on every single page. I mean, like, it just completely changed the way that I saw wealth, completely changed the way that I saw money, and helped me to actually detach my inner peace from however I was doing financially. Whatever the financial circumstances were no longer attached to my inner peace. And as a result, not only was I able to experience more gratitude, joy, and peace on a daily basis, but I was also able to actually generate more money in my life in ways that I actually felt satisfied and fulfilled by, not in ways that I hated myself for how I generated the money or that I was doing things that were frustrating me to actually make money, but rather in ways that I felt genuinely satisfied and fulfilled and happy. And this is what is key. So the main idea here in the Tao of Solomon is that we suffer because we try to chase this illusion of permanence. And we think that money is going to help us buy permanence. This idea of being able to be in control in our lives. Now, the problem with that is that it actually dissociates us from our very nature of being a human. A human being is a fragile and temporary creature, right? We are subject to death, disease, and old age. And because of that, a lot of people start to sometimes look at that as a downer kind of belief, like this is depressing, whatever the case is. However, it can actually be quite heartening. This idea of impermanence and the fact that we have this inherent fragility and impermanence to our existence is actually something that gives our life meaning and beauty. The fact that we have these inherent fragilities, the fact that we are here only for a short time is what actually gives life meaning. So when we attempt to use money to buy permanence or to try to control our destiny or to try to, you know, continue the legacy of our egos even beyond our actual time here, that's when we start to experience suffering. So I'm going to share a few passages from here and do a reflection on each of them, because these are the passages that really just struck a chord in me and helped me to create this detachment so that I could experience what I now feel and experience as true wealth. All right, so this first one's really interesting. So life is fleeting. The passing of moments upon moments Embrace them as they come up. Do not cling to them as they go. In this alone, there is tranquility. Moments of birth, moments of death. Moments of planting, moments of uprooting. Moments of killing, moments of healing. Moments of knocking down, moments of building up. Moments of mourning, moments of dancing. Moments of casting stones, moments of gathering stones. Moments of embracing, moments of departing. Moments of seeking, moments of forsaking. Moments of keeping, and moments of discarding. Moments of tearing, and moments of mending. Moments of silence, moments of speech. Moments of love, moments of hate. Moments of war, moments of peace. Moments in the passing of moments. This is life. There is suffering natural to this flow. There is no escaping either sorrow or joy. Do not add to the first by clinging to the second. For doing so, you deny the flow itself. Live the moment. Attend to the doing. Accept whatever comes into your hand. And this alone is the path to tranquility. Now, the idea here is that we actually create suffering, especially around our finances, because we are trying to cling to moments. We are trying to cling to this idea of control, this idea of permanence and perfection. And instead of embracing each moment as it is, we completely separate ourselves from the present. Now, in the last few episodes, we talked about intentions and delusions. We talked about this idea of living a life of intentionality. And to truly live a life of intentionality is to be present in each moment, to realize that all the happiness, joy, inner peace that you seek exists right now. You can have it now. And it's not contingent upon anything or anyone to give it to you. But this is why we always come back to this idea of sovereignty, of always being empowered to be free within yourself, to have dominion over your system. Now let's go through another passage here. Look into this carefully. Why do you labor so hard? To impress your neighbor? To blunt the pain of your own mortality? What nonsense. There is nothing you can that is not on its way to dust. The pursuit of permanence is but chasing after the wind. So then the fool asks, should I abandon work? That too is nonsense. Neither labor nor laziness holds the key. Your problem is not with work, but with the fruits of your work. Better one handful earned with joy than two earned with vexation. Do what you love, and contentment may follow. Do what you hate, and no amount of wealth will buy you peace. So that one hit me pretty hard. And the reason for that is because for a long time in my business, I was doing a lot of things that frustrated me. Now, anytime I would engage in a lot of frustration, I would sometimes, yes, make the money. Sometimes, no, I didn't make the money. But all I knew is that in that state of being, I was living a life of frustration. And when you, in essence, have all this material gain, but no joy for yourself, you're actually unable to actually enjoy what you've gained. And you start to become trapped in this cycle of chasing this symbol of value rather than actually experiencing value itself. So with this idea, we want to be able to be present in the process. Now, this doesn't mean don't set outcomes and don't set goals or don't have destinations that you wish to arrive at. What this means is that there is a harmony in both of these things. It's like, yes, set your destinations and your outcomes. And yes, you can want and desire or choose to have a rich life in a material sense, but don't sacrifice the fulfillment and inner peace to get there. Because at the end of the day, you will not be able to buy that peace no matter how much wealth that you end up creating for yourself. One of the misconceptions that we would sometimes get from Stoicism, as an example, is something like what Seneca would say. He said, the poor man is not the one who has less, but the one who desires more. Now, the funny thing about that is that Seneca lived a very rich life on a material sense. He would always have these big parties and soirees where he'd have all these people here and he'd be able to enjoy his riches. But the thing is, when we think about a quote like that, sometimes it gives us this misconception that like chasing money or having any kind of ambition is a bad thing, that it's going to lead to suffering. But that's not what this is saying at all. It's saying, do not trade your sense of satisfaction and peace for this idea, this abstraction of value that we call money. I'll read one final passage from this for this episode, which is that you imagine wealth will set you free. But I say this, freedom is not bought but seized. Freedom is not the last step but the first. You never have enough money. You never have enough possessions. You become enslaved to owning more and suffocate beneath a mountain of debt and fancy debris. The more you have, the more you are hounded. The more you have, the more you have to defend. And you will have no time for appreciation and joy. But make no idol of less, even as you smash the idol of more. Sweet is the sleep of those honest workers who find satisfaction in their lot. The desire of those enslaved to more and the hubris of those who worship less rob you of your acceptance and tranquility that acceptance brings. So it's not just about needing less, so to speak, because making an idol of less is just as foolish or ineffective as making an idol of more. This brings us back to what the Buddha was always saying in all of his lessons, which is to find your middle way. It's not about not having desires. It's not about not having material wealth. It's about realizing that you want to express what the Buddha would call right effort, or what we call with Zen Stoic philosophy, integral effort, which is you're putting enough effort to continue going at the speed that you're going forever. Meaning that if you're going to work for a certain amount of money, you have a financial goal, then you do so in the spirit of, I can do this thing forever. I'm not just doing it for the money, but I'm doing it because I actually enjoy doing this. And ironically speaking, the more you enjoy something, the more you can actually generate and make. Because when we spend our time in a state of frustration, we deplete our energy, versus when we spend our time in satisfaction or joy or creativity or fulfillment, we actually generate more energy to be able to go further in any endeavor that we choose. And so when we think about this idea of true wealth is going to exist in being able to be completely present in what you're doing, being able to fall in love with the process. And doesn't mean to discard the outcomes and the destinations that you seek, but it means to always remember to make sure that the juice is worth the squeeze for you. Because ultimately, that is what's going to bring you that sense of inner peace. So the way in which you detach your sense of inner peace from your financial state of affairs is to actually remember what that money is truly doing for you. And to remember that it's not more money, more problems. It's that when you try to solve your internal problems, you try to fill internal voids with material gains, you'll always end up losing out because you're not actually tapping into what you truly need in those moments. And so you can think of the money that you earn and the money that comes into your life as compensation for your contribution to life itself, for your contribution to other people, from your ability to help other people solve their needs. That is how you are providing value. And in the next episode, we're going to be talking about what it means to actually live with a sense of purpose, to actually do what you're made for. And when you do what you're made for, not only are you able to earn what you'd like, but you're also able to truly enjoy the journey all at the same time. So in the next episode, we're going to be talking about life purpose and ikigai, which ikigai is a Japanese word for one's reason for being. If you want your reflection in the mirror to smile, it is important that you smile first. The key to creating wealth in your life is to begin to create wealth and abundance from within. So I've created a meditation called the Magnetic Money Meditation that will allow you to start to create more money in your life simply by beginning within and finding that abundance that already exists within you. When you do this, you'll be able to actually see more opportunities, receive more, and feel overall more wealthy and more prosperous in all areas of your life. So go ahead and click the link in the show notes and get the free Magnetic Money Meditation today.